to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
And welcome everyone to the Political Cesspool Radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, joined in studio tonight by none other than Winston Smith as Bill Rowland takes another week away from the front lines. It's January 17th, 2009, and we're ready to rock and roll. Are you ready to rock, Winston?
I am always ready to rock, especially when you're the one rolling.
Well, I am ready to rock, too, so
Bill,
it should be...
Bill is rolling. Get it? Bill, rolling, rolling. I kill myself.
Bill Rowland is rocking outside the studio tonight, but we've got a great show for everybody tonight, Winston. You and me do, that is. A couple of great guests, some National Review boys tonight, John Derbyshire and Steve Saylor. Going to have some fun with our correspondent Ashley Russell there in the middle of the program, and a lot of salacious items to talk about, too. And I tell you what, before we ever even get started with the show tonight, I'm going to give you a quick little taste of just what kind of flavor the show is going to be. And if this story wasn't concocted with the political cesspool in mind, this is the kind of thing that happens just so we can have something to talk about. This happened out in California, the great land of diversity, and even caught some mainstream attention. I'll just read the headline and let you fill in the blank. Mexican man sells his 14-year-old daughter and then calls the cops when the buyer doesn't pay up. You may think I'm making that up, but this is what America is becoming. And if you don't think we're trading down, you're wrong. Here's the scoop. As we continue to import some real geniuses into America from Mexico, in California, one Jesus sells his 14-year-old daughter to another Jesus for cash, beer, and meat. When the other Jesus doesn't pay up, even though he's having sex with the girl, Jesus number one calls the cops. And this comes from the story itself. Police arrested a 36-year-old California man after he allegedly sold his daughter for marriage and then called the police to complain that her buyer didn't pay off his debt, which included $16,000 cash, 100 cases of beer, and several cases of meat, NBC reported. Police said Marcelino de Jesus Martinez tried to arrange for his 14-year-old daughter to marry Margarito de Jesus Galinda. After the girl moved in with Galindo, Martinez called the police to complain that he had not yet been paid. Both men were arrested. Is that not fodder for the political cesspool radio program or what, Winston?
That is precisely what our show exists to talk about. James, this thing reminds me of what we talked about last week. We talked about how the New Year baby at Parkland Memorial Hospital in Dallas was born to a 17-year-old girl from the father was a 21 or 22-year-old man.
Yeah, she might have been. I know she was 15.
Yeah, she was too young. It was statutory rape by any.
She was 15.
And these were mestizos.
Well, the moral of the story, as you were alluding to, Winston, it ain't European Americans that are doing this kind of stuff. You know, no. I don't remember the last time I read a story about a white guy selling his daughter for beer and meat. But we got to go to break. Stay tuned for more stories just like that on tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool Radio program with your hosts, James Edwards and Winston Smith. Great guests coming up. You're not going to want to miss a single minute over the course of the next 2 hours and 55 minutes. We got a great one. We'll be back right after this.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
Go to drinkjujube.com. That's drinkjujube.com and find out what two dangers you really do face today and how drinking the juice of the jujube fruit protects you against both. The jujube fruit has been used in Chinese medicine for almost 4,000 years. At drinkjujube.com, find out why thousands of people, including football star John Elway, featured there in a CBS TV interview, are drinking every day the energizing juice of the powerful, concentrated, free radical-fighting nutritional drink of jujube, plus seven other highly acclaimed fruits and berries, 12 essential vitamins, and 68 minerals, all in highly absorbable, bio-ready, convenient one-ounce servings. In today's fast-paced, stressful, toxin-filled environments, you need the extra edge to stay that cut above. DrinkJujube.com.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Would you walk around with your credit card number displayed on your back for anyone to read? Of course not. But if you have one of the 50 million new contactless credit and debit cards in circulation in your wallet, that's exactly what you're doing. I'm Walt Augustinowicz, founder of Identity Stronghold, and we think this is information you need to know. You may not even realize you already have one of these cards because they look physically just like the old card. The difference is an RFID chip hidden inside the card that makes radio communication with the card possible right through your wallet, purse, or pants pocket without you ever removing the card. Pickpockets no longer even have to touch you to get your information. Our company realizes the privacy danger this represents, and that's why we manufacture the Secure Sleeve. The Secure Sleeve is a patent-pending card sleeve that contains a radio frequency barrier, preventing radio signals from reaching your card. You can get more information and purchase the Secure Sleeve online at idstronghold.com. That's idstronghold.com, or call us at 800-610-2770.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool. To get on the show, call toll-free at 1-800-313-9443. And now here's your host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Well, hopefully we piqued your interest for what promises to be an outstanding installment of our radio program this evening. Don't forget, coming up a little bit later, we'll be talking with the very venerable Steve Saylor on this program coming up in the third hour. But right now, we're very honored to have on the program, making his first appearance on this award-winning show, John Derbyshire. He is a British-American author and columnist. He writes for the magazines National Review and New English Review on a broad range of topics, including immigration, China, history, mathematics, culture, politics, and race. Derbyshire graduated from University College London, where he studied mathematics. Mr. Derbyshire, great to have you on the Political Cesspool this evening. How are you? Are we on with Mr. Derbyshire?
Hello?
I hear you. I hear you now. Little technical glitches here in the studio every now and then. Again, great to have you tonight, sir. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, James. It's great to be on the show.
Great to have you with us. As I mentioned in your brief introduction there, you are a man who has commented quite eloquently on a broad range of topics. So if it doesn't displease you tonight, we'd like to ask you questions pertaining to a broad range of topics, the first of which being what made you make the change from being a computer programmer to a full-time columnist and author?
Well, somebody offered me a big advance for a book. That was what did it. but I've always been a writer. I'm a chronic writer. You know, I used to write letters to the editors of newspapers, And anything for anybody that would pay me to write, or even if they wouldn't pay me, I've always been... One of the Roman authors said that writing is neither an art nor a science, it's a disease. And I think I agree with that, and I'm a sufferer. So as soon as I was looking at the prospect of actually getting a decent-sized bundle of money for writing something, I quit the day job.
Well, I don't blame you for that. Matter of fact, that brings me to a pretty good question for my co-host, Winston Smith. Winston is the prolific writer of our little circle of friends here at this studio. Winston, have you ever gotten a big advance for any of your writings? Are you still waiting on that boat to come in?
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that boat. I think it went down with the Titanic, though. But but like Mr. Derbyshire, I write whether people pay or not, and I think George Orwell would agree with Mr. Derbyshire that whatever it is that lies at the bottom of a writer's motives is a mystery.
Yeah, I think so. Now, Winston, I'm hoping that's a pseudonym taken from Orwell, is it?
His parents were big fans of 1984, John.
Okay, good.
Do people think that after 1948, English-speaking parents of the Smith family stopped naming their sons Winston?
Well, there are not too many Adolfs in Germany anymore.
No. if you go to the Wikipedia entry for the political cesspool, Dr. Derbyshire, you'll see that they say I'm Harold Covington, and if you go to the discussion section of that entry, you'll see that over the past few months I've carried on a rather humorous debate with them over whether or not I'm Harold Covington or not, and I frequently deal with people asking me if I'm actually Winston Smith or not, but. You know, it goes with the territory.
Well,
so.
I've been to his house, and I can assure you he is not Harold Covington. But anyway, this interview got off track pretty quickly. You know, this is the freight train that took the dirt road, as they say. But back to John Derbyshire, certainly the man of focus right now. Mr. Derbyshire, how did you stop worrying and come to love global warming? Pretty interesting story there.
I don't know that I do love global warming. I don't care about it. My attitude to the whole controversy is that we really don't have good enough data. We just about have good enough data to say, yeah, there's a long-term secular warming trend, but, you know, it goes up and down for a few years. But we really don't have enough data to say whether it's anthropogenic or not. I don't believe we do. I get into arguments with people like this, but I haven't seen data to convince me that human activity is really affecting the climate of the Earth one way or the other.
So you
and,
would probably
you know the climate of the Earth is very unstable. It's the last ice age came down. I think the most recent studies show that the last ice age came down in a matter of decades. It was quite swift, and you know there were hardly any human beings around at that point. So I'm skeptical of the whole thing. I think the human, the climate of the Earth is unstable, and we should just accept that as a fact of life and cope with the problems that it raises. I don't think there's any cause for hysteria, and I certainly don't think that you're going to get the nations of the world, especially big polluting nations like India and China. I don't think you're going to get those to reduce their carbon emissions significantly while they're still developing. That's not going to happen. They've got no incentive to do that.
Well, I would certainly agree with that, and fair enough. Shifting gears again, as I said, this was going to be kind of an interview in which we explore a spectrum. There's a gentleman by the name of Christian Lander who has a popular book entitled Stuff White People Like. Now, you reviewed that, if my information is correct, for the American Conservative Magazine.
Yeah,
what did you
correct.
Find peculiar about it, and what did you think of the type of worldview that was actually represented there?
Well, I thought it was a bit of a spoof. I mean, it's not a book to be taken too seriously, but he has identified a bunch of people, and it's not white people. It's a subset of white people, and probably includes a few non-white people too. He's identified a subset of the population that has certain tastes and certain attitudes. Liberal, young, mostly young, I think, yuppie, insouciant, trend hounds, like their creature comforts, very, very fond of patting themselves on the back for having enlightened attitudes about, sex and race and so on. So he identified a group there, but I'm not sure that he was the first to identify. There's a big overlap with David Brooks, Bourgeois Bohemians. Remember David Brooks, Bobo's in Paradise, 6 or 7 years ago. So I'm not sure that it's even original, but he kind of made a fun thing out of it, and that's good. It's always good to have a little fun in your life.
Well, that book started off as nothing more than a blog. He was just
making his
observations, and it became wildly popular. And I agree with you that he has simply identified a small subset of European American culture, and I agree with you as well that these are the people who do like to pat themselves on the backs. In fact, they will gladly throw each other under the bus to prove that they are the more current with the trends. They will gladly insult other white people. They will gladly accuse other white people of racism if it will increase their standing among other people.
Well, I understand you have Steve Saylor on your next segment.
Well, he's coming up, actually. This is a very long show. It's a 3-hour show. He's coming up. Well, I'll tell you exactly. He'll be coming on at 10:30 tonight.
At 10:30?
Central time.
Oh, all right. So it's 11:30 my time. All right. Well, Steve has very interesting things to say about this. And in fact, I think Steve was instrumental as much as anyone in publicizing stuff white people like. I first found out about that website from Steve and started going to the website, and then the book came out. So Steve was a big factor there. And Steve will tell you, and I agree with him, that really what you have here is white people in competition with white people using minorities as tokens. With, of course, Barack Obama's the biggest token of all. But this concern, this feigned concern for minorities and minority issues, is feigned. It's bogus. These people are just as keen as any other American, for example, not to live in majority black areas and not to send their kids to schools with majority population student bodies. They're very keen on that. They don't want to do that. In fact, Stephen Lander says so somewhere in the book. He points to, I think it's Seattle as the whitest big city in America. Everybody wants to go and live in Seattle. So that's the spoof that he's running. He's sort of poking fun at these rather false attitudes that a lot of these liberals have. There was a marvelous illustration back in November. I put it on my own little radio show on National Review Online of some liberals on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And I don't know if you remember this, but there was a clip on YouTube that was going around in the weeks before the election of a McCain demonstration in that region, in the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and some McCain supporters were walking through the streets with banners, having a little demonstration, and people being rude to them and yelling at them and giving them the finger and saying obscene things.
Mr. Derbyshire, if you don't mind, I hate to interrupt you. We have to go to a break. I promise you I'm going to let you pick up right where you're leaving off when we return on the other side. The Political Cesspool will continue with our esteemed guest, John Derbyshire, right after these words from our sponsors.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
Attention RBN listeners. The Freeze-Dry Guy, providing the finest in long-term storage food since 1970. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. In actual scientific tests, these foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. These foods are delicious tasting, hearty, light to carry, and easy to prepare under the most adverse conditions. Unfortunately, many people building a family food storage program, as well as many companies providing emergency feeding programs, simply do not give you enough protein, especially animal protein. No other food satisfies like animal protein during stressful times. If you're a meat eater, you will definitely want our freeze-dried meats and entrees, but we do offer vegetarian items as well. Visit freezedryguide.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Hi, I'm Roger Mason, the inventor of Beta Prostate. Men, are you getting up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom? Is your love life not what it used to be? Many men don't realize these issues are often related to their prostate health. Prostate problems start about age 40, and by 50, over half of men already have a prostate problem. This only gets worse. What can you do? See a doctor for checkups and take Beta Prostate. It is the well-researched natural formula that supports a healthy prostate, and it's made with pure beta-cytosterol, 11 essential minerals plus vitamin D. This is the best-selling prostate formula in the world. It's safe, it's healthy, and what every man over 40 should take for good prostate nutrition.
To try Beta Prostate risk-free, dial 1-800-362-5848. Call today for Beta Prostate and get Roger Mason's best-selling book free with your order. Dial 1-800-362-5848. That's 1-800-362-5848.
Hi there. The political cesspool listeners are well-informed and proactive. Have you heard much about the killer MRSA in your area? Here's some information I'll bet you didn't know much about. We've come across doctors who don't know. Visit 12diseases.com, where you'll find an ebook about how to protect your child from the 12 diseases your mother never told you about. Guard parent. Things like deadly MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, rampant in hospitals, schools, and clinics, or Chagas, known well south of the border, and many others we might have heard about, but think, we don't have to worry about that. This is not some encyclopedia or complex medical book. You'll learn quickly about 12 emerging or re-emerging diseases that have horrible consequences for the health and well-being of your children. It's written in a plain, easy-to-read format that anyone can understand. That's 12diseases.com.
Let's return to the political cesspool and our own bunch of rebels, the political cesspool guys.
Welcome back to the show as we continue on with John Derbyshire. And Mr. Derbyshire, by all means, continue on with where you left off. You were commenting on some McCain rallies in New York when we ran into that unrelenting commercial break.
Yeah, I was reminding people, I assume most people saw this, of that video of the McCain march through Upper West Side of Manhattan, where the residents were yelling and booing and giving them the finger and so on. And then just a week after that, there was a news story in the New York newspapers about the Upper West Side, about that very same district where the school board, the New York City school board, wanted to redraw the school boundaries so that their kids would be going to a different elementary school. And they were up in arms about it. And I looked up, there's a very good website called greatschools.net where you can look up the student body and the teacher body and everything you want to know about a school. And these Upper West Side liberals, just the kind of people that have the sort of tastes that Christian Land is writing about, what they were up in arms about was that their kids were going from a school that was like 20% minority to a school that was 70% minority. That's what got them angry. So there's this huge reservoir of hypocrisy out there. And I think it's good to see somebody poking fun at it and satirizing it a little bit.
That's how this,
help.
I was just going to say that's how this show has survived for 4 years. We discover the double standards, explore them, accentuate them, poke fun at them, and here we are 4 years later. But it's got to be done. I mean, the hypocrisies and the double standards that reign on the left have absolutely got to be, I believe, discussed.
Yeah,
And so that's what.
As I said, Steve Saylor has really good insights into all this. He's really thought about this, and
he's got a great sense of humor too.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's a really nice guy. Yeah,
to say the least. Well, yeah. As we continue on, Mr. Derbyshire, we were of course talking with you about one of the last questions we had was with regards to a book that you had reviewed, and I want to make mention of the fact that you are certainly a literary giant in your own right. As a novelist, your book, Seeing Calvin Coolidge in a Dream, was a New York Times Notable Book of the Year, and your more recent work, Prime Obsession, was awarded an inaugural prize from the Mathematical Association of America. Your work at National Review has also been well documented. I want to ask you a quick question about that as we have just a short segment here. Many paleoconservatives and libertarians used to see National Review much more favorably. Lou Rockwell has once even said that you were the only intellectual there at National Review. Do you think many people are right when they criticize National Review heavily from the paleo persuasion?
Yeah, in that paleo conservatism doesn't get much of a look in at National Review. Sometimes there are some gestures towards paleoconservatism, and it's kind of a moving target. That kind of thing might come back at National Review, but at the moment paleoconservative issues are really off on the periphery there. Yeah, that's true, and I do think that's a bit of a shame. I do what I can to help promote them at the magazine. But I'm not even an employee. I'm just a freelancer who sends them a lot of stuff. So I don't really have a big voice there.
Right. Well, nevertheless, I think that's one of the things that's been lost in the marketplace or the court of public opinion with regards to political commentary. You have, well, this is getting almost elementary at this point, but obviously the neoconservative line, which isn't that much different than the liberal or even Marxist line in this day and age. And so, National Review, a publication that has been able to stand the test of time to the extent that it has, you hate to see it moving more and more to the center. But we all do what we can. You do your part, I do mine. Winston does his. And together we'll see if we can make a difference. But I was reading also from an article of yours, and it elicited a pretty provocative question. Will the United States survive until 2022? And why is that date significant?
Well, why is that date significant? I think it's significant because at the time I wrote that, I had just been reading a book by a Soviet dissident from back in the 70s, called "Will the Soviet Union Survive Until 1984?" Who was that? One of the, I think it was Amalric. I think it was Andrei Amalric. It was Andrei Amalric. He died in a car crash a few years afterwards. But he put together a bunch of essays that he'd written and made a book out of them. Called "Will the Soviet Union Survive Until 1984?" And he put that together in 1979. So he was looking forward 15 years. So I thought it would be kind of cute to do the same thing from 2007. And
well,
in 2007, I was reading this book and thinking, okay, let's add 15 years.
Mr. Derbyshire, just sit tight one more time, my friend. Sorry to cut you off again. We're going to have a little bit longer segment when we come back from this next commercial break, and we will pick it up right there with the question. Will we survive until 2022? John Derbyshire is going to answer that when we come back.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the political cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
And people say we monkey around, but we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.
Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johngalea.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264. And johngliha.com.
With financial uncertainty circling the globe due to job losses, decline in the housing market, a climate of corruption, bailouts, currency rigging, and unfair competition, many are once more turning to precious metals as the only hedge against the uncertainty of the future. With the U.S. House conducting hearings on proposals to confiscate workers' personal retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, this is the time to secure your assets. Call Republic Trading Group today, 800-691-7898, before this happens, and find out how easy it is to convert your existing IRA and in some instances your 401k plan into real wealth now. Don't let the ravages of hyperinflation caused by the massive increase of fiat currency now flooding world markets affect your retirement account. Call RTG at 800-691-7898 and experience the security and peace of mind that only real gold and silver can offer. That number again is 800-691-7898. Call now.
Would you walk around with your credit card number displayed on your back for anyone to read? Of course not. But if you have one of the 50 million new contactless credit and debit cards in circulation in your wallet, that's exactly what you're doing. I'm Walt Augustinowicz, founder of Identity Stronghold, and we think this is information you need to know. You may not even realize you already have one of these cards because they look physically just like the old card. The difference is an RFID chip hidden inside the card that makes radio communication with the card possible right through your wallet, purse, or pants pocket without you ever removing the card. Pickpockets no longer even have to touch you to get your information. Our company realizes the privacy danger this represents, and that's why we manufacture the Secure Sleeve. The Secure Sleeve is a patent-pending card sleeve that contains a radio frequency barrier, preventing radio signals from reaching your card. You can get more information and purchase the Secure Sleeve online at idstronghold.com. That's idstronghold.com or call us at 800-610-2770.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool. To get on the show, call toll-free at 1-800-313-9443. And now here's your host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, the tyranny of network radio with commercials and sponsors, and we just got to soldier through it, guys. Welcome back, John Derbyshire, our guest right now, and we continue on with the noted columnist and author, mathematician. John, you were talking about the year 2022, asking the rhetorical question. Well, maybe it's not so rhetorical. Will the United States survive until then? Continue on with what you were commenting on.
Yeah, I tried to break it down into different aspects of possible failure: political failure, economic failure, cultural failure, military failure, and there were so many things that could go wrong. And now with this this recent economic crash, I'm starting. It wasn't entirely seriously meant. It was more putting up warning flags, you know. But now with this recent crash, I'm wondering if perhaps I didn't get some of it right. Perhaps I should go and read that article again. But certainly, economic failure is looming, looking us right in the face, isn't it? I mean, you know, we're losing all these jobs, and we're losing them. In a way, I can't help but suspect because we don't actually have that many jobs outside government work. You know,
it's the number one employer now.
The factories are all in Bangladesh and China and the back offices are all in India, what are we going to do?
That's a hell of a question. I wish I had the answer. You know, we talk all the time, Winston, about solutions, and, you know, there's no answer to the very simple question, what are we going to do? Maybe one day the solution will present itself. I don't know. We're going to continue to fight until then.
You're
having quite an animated conversation with John Derbyshire during the commercial break, so I'd like to extend you the opportunity to ask a question now.
Oh, me?
Yeah. You're a co-host.
During the break, we were talking about your book, Prime Obsession, and the history of the Raymond's problem.
Yeah, this was a book I published 5 years ago on the Riemann hypothesis, which is a big outstanding problem in pure mathematics, very pure mathematics.
Dealing with complex numbers where S is not equal to 1 and all that?
Right, yeah. In fact, at the back of the book, there's a song. There's a song about the Riemann hypothesis. Oh, where are the zeros of zeta of S? GFB Riemann has made a good guess. They're all on the critical line, stated he, and their density is 1 over 2 pi log t. And then it goes on for several more verses. But yeah.
That was a pretty good singing voice. You could have been a part of the British invasion. You could have taken Peter Noon's job
calling.
From Herman's Hermits.
Well, if I had my backing group here, you know, I could have made a much better job.
I told you, Winston, we were going to cover it all with John Derbyshire tonight. And we always pat ourselves on the back as being a political talk show that really covers every single issue. Now, who would have thought we would have gotten into prime numbers and even broken out into tune tonight? But
One reason I don't get into too much trouble with the magazines I write for is that my real interest is in cultural things and cultural history. And things like that. That's the the Riemann hypothesis. My book on it goes all the way back to the Greeks, actually, and that's what I'm really interested in. To tell you the truth, I hope not too many people who I work for are listening to this. But to tell you the truth, I find politics pretty boring, but these cultural trends and these great tides, these ebbing and flowing tides of culture and taste, that's much more interesting to me, and that's what I wanted to write about.
I agree with you.
With regards to culture, I have something, Winston, that you probably didn't know about, and I'm sure John didn't know.
I doubt
that. You spent your last several months, but both of you have this in common, and that's an affinity for China. And with regards to that culture, John, Winston was over there for a job for the last several months, and I wanted to ask you this question that will undoubtedly spark a flame here. Given your travels in China, John, and your cultural ties there, how do the Chinese people, in your opinion, feel about their civilization as opposed to the way Americans feel about themselves? And how do Chinese people view the decline of the West in general?
With satisfaction is the answer to your last question. But I think the satisfaction is misplaced. If you look at Chinese history, they haven't been awfully good at holding their country together. Somebody once said China isn't really a country, it's a civilization. And they're not the same thing. And Chinese civilization has this wonderful continuity going back, way back into the early second millennium BC, at least. But China as a country has much more often been divided or misruled than a unified, well-governed polity. They're not very good at politics and not very good at holding their country together. So while they're right now, China's fairly stable right now. It's as stable as it gets, but it's not as stable as one of the old, well-rooted Western democracies. It's not as stable as any Anglo-Saxon country.
Well, let me ask you this, and then I want to turn it over to Winston, because, we were actually talking quite a bit at the close of last week's program about Winston's time in China, and we actually got quite a few emails about your commentary on China, Winston, and people asked me to try to find a way to bring it up in this program again because they wanted to hear more of your thoughts on the matter. And then, of course, with John Derbyshire being our guest tonight and in his connection with China, I thought it was perfect. But I want to ask you this question, John, before we turn it over to Winston for a moment. In your opinion, is Chinese nationalism expansionist to the point where you could one day envision the Chinese military trying to invade American territory such as Guam or Hawaii?
No. You know, you can make a fool of yourself answering questions like that. But no. For one thing, the big facts of the world today tend to be demographic, and China's heading for a demographic cliff. All these East Asian countries, Japan's in the lead. Japan's total fertility rate is, what, 1.2 now? 1.2, 1.3, something like that. China's 1.7 and dropping. South Korea's 1.1 something, I think. And Hong Kong is 1.0. Hong Kong has the lowest total fertility rate of any established territory. So they're heading for a demographic cliff, and they're just not going to have enough young men to really go military adventuring. I mean, they might try something in something like the Paracel Islands, or maybe Taiwan. They might take a jump at Taiwan. I don't know, but Guam or Hawaii or Japan? No, I don't see it. I really don't see it.
Winston, I know you were chomping at the bit to continue on when we ran out of time last week. What do you make of all this? And I know you're eager to talk about anything Chinese after the time you spent there. Having a guy like John Derbyshire on, I mean, you could ask him a question even about the matter.
I'm sure I could, but excuse me. I found China to be an absolutely fascinating country, and the Chinese people are themselves rather enigmatic. But I agree with you. I do expect that someday there will be bullets flying between the United States and China, but it's not going to be the full-fledged all-out war that some people are predicting or probably even hoping for. But there is going to be bloodshed between the United States and China, more than likely because of Taiwan. What do you think of that, Mr. Derbyshire?
There'll be some friction. And the friction will make sparks, and people will get killed. But total war, no. I don't see it. I don't see, massed advances by thousands of tanks across a plain. I really don't see that. They haven't got the manpower for it. They don't have the casus belli, really. And I'm not at all convinced that America would do anything if they made a move against Taiwan. I mean, what's the United States going to do? Do the American people really have any appetite for that? What are you going to do, send an expeditionary force? You're going to get that through Congress? Really? I don't think so.
No.
I mean, we'd bellyache about it. And, we'd go to the United Nations and bang our fists and talk about sanctions and so on. And, two or three years later, everything would be just the same.
In the end, China would thumb their nose at us like they do everybody else.
Well, because they can.
Yeah.
Because they're ethnocentric, they can do it. Because, they don't impose...
They're terrifically ethnocentric, and the difference between their assertiveness and our assertiveness, apart from the fact that theirs is on the rise and ours is on the decline, is that theirs is based in very strong ethno-nationalism, and ours isn't.
Mm-hmm. And they don't believe that they'll benefit by becoming a consumer economy. They manufacture, they industrialize, they have a trade policy that actually benefits their people. So we could learn a lot from them, but I think if you're Chinese, I think... there's obviously a lot, it's well, in many ways they're heading in the right direction. In many ways they're heading in the wrong direction. But James, I was very happy
to be walking around amongst the Chinese, knowing exactly how nationalistic they were. I was glad to be around people who had their own interests at heart. And I, even though it was odd at first to be looked at with some suspicion, I appreciated that they had no reason to trust me. They didn't know me. I was oddly out of place there. I was not in Beijing, which is highly westernized. I was in a small town where they rarely ever saw an Occidental. So I think where strong nationalism obtains, people are more comfortable. Visitors are more comfortable because they know what's expected of them.
Well, you know, it's a knee-jerk reaction to criticize the Chinese for being communist or having a communist government, but then look at our own. I mean, how far away from we are that. But I want to ask you one more question, John. It's almost a little bit trivial, and then we'll get back on to something a little more politically salient before we run out of time here. But if I'm not mistaken, you were involved in a Bruce Lee interview. Is that a fact?
A Bruce Lee movie. Yeah, that's right.
Well, tell us about that real quick. I mean, you know, that's interesting, if nothing else, to say the least.
It was 1972, summer of 1972. Bruce Lee was making his third Chinese movie before he really became a hit in the West. And then he immediately died as soon as he did become a hit in the West. But and they needed some Westerners for him to fight. And and somebody, I was living in a guest house in Hong Kong, and a Chinese guy came in and said, "Do you want to be in a movie?" I said, "How much does it pay?" And he told me, and I said, "All right." So there I was in this movie with Bruce Lee. Yeah.
So when people go to buy one of your books, they can also swing by the video store and see your cinematic debut.
Well, on my website, johndarbyshire.com, somewhere on my website, there are some movie clips from that. I actually put them on YouTube, and then I just put some links to the YouTube clips of me in this Bruce Lee movie.
Well, thank you for doing that, because every time I go into Blockbuster, no matter if it's warranted or not, I have a late fee. So I'm just going to go to your website and check it out there. Hey, real quick, what's the name of the movie?
Ah, that's a tangled question. It's either Return of the Dragon or The Way of the Dragon. It's been issued under two different names.
I have a feeling it's
the one with Chuck Norris. Get the one with Chuck Norris, that's the one.
All right, well, that's it. We'll go check that out. And
That's the one where Bruce Lee rips a handful of chest hair off of Chuck Norris.
That's right, in the Roman Colosseum. Yeah. It takes place in Rome. Yeah.
And then the guy at the end who beats up Bruce Lee is John Darbyshire.
Exactly.
No, actually, he kicks me over a chair.
Wisdom. I mean, is that not a story or what? This is an interesting interview. But I got to ask you this. We only have a couple of minutes left until our next break, and then we're going to bring you back for some contact information and things of that nature. But next week is a pretty big week. I mean, it's Martin Luther King Day. It's the inauguration of Barack Obama. If that's not a cultural Marxist dream week, I don't know what is. I mean, by God, you can't say the name of Jesus Christ during Christmas, but we could have Martin Luther King Day. But this brings me to a question about Ron Paul. What did you think of the Ron Paul newsletter fiasco? Did you find his exaltation of Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King to be ridiculous?
I'm sorry, I missed that. Ron exalted Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King?
Do you remember that, Winston?
I do.
But the fuss about the newsletters was about people saying politically incorrect things in the newsletters. And Ron not minding. Wasn't that what it was about?
No, I think it was a little bit more than that. What was it exactly, Winston? I mean, no, he was pretty complimentary.
I think Lou Rockwell had written some editorials or some articles for Ron Paul's newsletter, and they said some pretty harsh things about African Americans, and Ron Paul felt obliged to pay homage and genuflect before the altar of political correctness by saying that among his heroes are Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King.
That
caused me to pull my support on air for Ron Paul.
I remember covering that story. It was about a year ago now. It was fairly early in the primary season, so it's kind of escaped me a little bit. But
I'm sorry, I missed that. I missed that little segment there. Okay, all right. Now that I know about it, how do I feel about it? I feel a couple of ticks less enthusiastic about Ron Paul than I did before, but it wouldn't have stopped me voting for him.
Now, I voted for him in the primary, even though by the time he made it to Tennessee, it was less than a lost cause. But you see, you know, it's just upsetting, I think, that when you have a guy that can galvanize our people, and by our people, I'm talking about the founding stock of this nation. I'm talking about the people who have some sort of a social consciousness, and they are working class, for lack of a better word, conservative people. And anytime you find a guy, a leader, for whom these people can rally behind, they always let you down by doing something like this. And
I think you have to just let go of the whole leader thing. Ron Paul was a kind of anti-leader. I've been thinking about Ron Paul a lot, reading about this inauguration extravaganza that we're having next week. And Ron, in one of his TV appearances, said something about his inauguration, where it would be like half an hour on the podium and then, you know, off for a cup of coffee with a few select friends.
John, I don't mean to interrupt again, a third time.
Yes,
the
you
charm.
Do.
We got to go. Sure. Yeah, I do mean to interrupt. I have to interrupt. We have to go to break. We're going to be back to wrap up with you, and we'll continue on about Ron Paul before we get some contact information for you and your books. The Political Cesspool continues right after this, ladies and gentlemen.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
Let's go.
In these hard economic times, being prepared is the most important thing you can do. To everyone in the Fredericksburg and Austin, Texas areas, it's your time to get prepared. Come and hear the Freeze-Dry Guy give a spirited presentation on your family preparedness and emergency food storage needs for the uncertain times ahead. There will be plenty of good information, lots of samples, and sharing of information in a relaxed atmosphere. The first presentation will be in Fredericksburg, Texas, on Friday, January 16th at 6 p.m. at the AG Building at 95 Frederick Road. The second and third presentation will be in Austin, Texas, on Saturday and Sunday, January 17th and 18th at 2 p.m. at Brave New Books at 1904 Guadalupe Street. These are no-charge presentations. Come early, though, to ensure good seating. For more information, visit www.freezedryguy.com or call 530-265-8333. Bring a friend and enjoy these free Freeze Dry Guy preparedness presentations. The Freeze Dry Guy looks forward to meeting you.
You never know when an emergency will strike. Whether it's a hurricane, tornado, blizzard, or earthquake, everyone listening to me right now could find themselves without food and power with little or no advance warning. With over 14 years' experience, Ready Made Resources stands ready to assist you to be prepared. The Katahdin Vario Microfilter is a lightning-fast water filtering system that removes waterborne bacteria and cysts, and it also improves the taste of water. Ready Made Resources carries Mountain House Foods, the number one lightweight, compact, great-tasting food choice that you should have stored away as part of your emergency preparedness kit. There's free shipping on both of these items. For more information, go online at www.readymaderesources.com or call toll-free 1-800-627-3809. Ready Made Resources is here to help you be prepared.
Do you have more than $25,000 in credit card debt? Would you like to be out of debt in just 90 days using a system that has proven and guaranteed results for 15 years? I'm John Glia, the author of Winning the Collection Game and founder of Zero Debt in 90 Days. My system has helped tens of thousands of people that realized they had way too much credit card debt or just could not or did not want to continue paying credit card companies.
My wife was really skeptical, but she liked your written guarantees. I'm glad we went with the program. Thanks to your system, we've got a fresh start and are debt-free, and it only took a few months.
I have trained over 80 attorneys in at least 15 states on how to use my system and get their clients out of debt in 90 days. But you don't need an attorney to get the benefits of my proven system. In fact, you can keep your cash. No need to negotiate with creditors. No need to pay legal fees or make a federal case out of your situation. Call my team today at 321-747-0264 or visit johngalea.com and ask for free information on how you can be debt-free in 90 days without making one payment to any creditor. That's 321-747-0264 and johngalia.com.
And now let's return to the Political Cesspool.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. James Edwards and Winston Smith here with you on tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. It's Saturday evening, January 17th, as we continue on tonight on the Republic Broadcasting Network. transmitting via satellite to our affiliate stations across the country, and of course coming to you live from our flagship station, AM 1380 WLRM Radio, right here in Memphis, Tennessee. Our guest for the first hour has been John Darbyshire. It's been a great interview, very fast-paced and very... Well, it just went by too fast is what I'm trying to say. John, before we run out of time with you, is there anything that we failed to bring to your attention that you'd like to share with our audience?
I can't think of a thing. I think
we covered it all. Winston, we did good.
That's great questions. I mean, you know, my opinion, pretty much everything I've written for the last 10 years is out there on my website or on one of my websites. So I just refer readers to that, and I broadcast every week on Nash Review Online. We have a little derb radio there. You know, anybody wants to know anything more about what I've got to say, it's pretty much all out there.
Winston, do you have a closing question? I know you've been quite enthralled.
Why do you have a mugshot on your website?
What website are you talking about?
Well, doesn't everybody? I think people want to know what you look like. Steve Saylor has one on his website, and I'm better looking than Steve.
Well, I agree.
You can tell him that from me.
I'll tell him that. Winston, why don't we have your mugshot on?
The truth is, I'm a vampire. I don't take pictures.
Well...
I wish the audience could have heard us talking about mathematical history. I think they would have gotten more out of that than listening to James blather on about stuff.
Yeah, well, we'll have to have John back on to talk about mathematical history. There's no more riveting topic than that, in my opinion.
Can I just plug my website, guys?
Absolutely, and with our pleasure. Please do.
The one with the mugshot.
It's real easy. It's just www.johndarbyshire.com. That's all one word, John. Derby, as in Kentucky Derby, or Kentucky Derby, and Shire, as in The Hobbit. JohnDarbyshire.com.
Well, we'll spell that out just in case. That is John, as it sounds, and then Derbyshire is Derbyshire. There we go. JohnDarbyshire.com. And John, thanks for being with us for an hour on this weekend night. We hope you had as much fun as we did, and we look forward to working with you. Hopefully for a long time to come. Great making your acquaintance this evening.
It was great fun. I enjoyed it very much. Thanks, guys. Good luck to you.
Have a great night. Winston, I know you enjoyed that one. We only have about 20 seconds to break, but you're not going to enjoy that half as much as you're going to enjoy the rest of the show because we've got one of our correspondents from South Carolina coming up in a few minutes. We've got Steve Saylor coming on a little bit later. That's always going to be fun. And we've got a lot of good stuff to talk about. I mean, I've got, you know, listen to one of the – just to give you an example – student auctions off her virginity for $4 million. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that and a lot more when we return. That's at the Political Cesspool. Don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back.
Way, hour number two of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
Hello, my